There was a failure with the incubator. When Nicholas... The doctor turned his head to the side and reached halfway to his eyes, but was able to compose himself. I'm sorry, I still call him that.
Oh, it's okay.
Mayor Jeans was holding Deputy Marnes's hand. She wasn't sure when or how that had happened. The doctor didn't seem to notice, or more likely care.
Poor Juliet.
He shook his head.
She was distraught. She blamed Rhoda at first. This experienced delivery nurse who had done nothing but work a miracle to give our boy the slim chance he had. I explained this. I think Juliet knew. She just needed someone to hate.
He nodded to Jeans.
Girls that age, you know.
Believe it or not, I remember.
Jeans forced a smile and Dr. Nichols returned it. She felt Marnes squeeze her hand.
It wasn't until her mother died that she took to blaming the incubator that had failed. Well, not the incubator, but the poor condition it was in. The general state of rot all things become.
Your wife died from the complications?
It was another detail Jeans felt she must have missed from the file.
My wife killed herself a week later.
Again, the clinical detachment. Jeans wondered if this was a survival mechanism that had kicked in after these events, or a personality trait already in place.
It seems like I would remember that,
Deputy Marnes said, the first words he'd uttered since introducing himself to the doctor.
Well, I wrote the certificate myself, so I could put whatever cause I wanted.
And you admit to this?
Marnes seemed ready to leap off the bench. To do what, Jeans could hardly guess. She held his arm to keep him in place.
Beyond the statute of limitations? Of course. I admit it. It was a worthless lie, anyway. Juliet was smart, even at that age. She knew, and this is what drove her.
He stopped himself.
Drove her what? Mayor Jeans asked. Crazy?
No. Dr. Nichols shook his head. I wasn't going to say that. It's what drove her away. She applied for a change in casters, demanded to move down to mechanical, to enter the shop as a shadow. She was a year young for that sort of placement, but I agreed. I signed off on it. I thought she'd go, get some deep air, come back. I was naive. I thought the freedom would be good for her.
And you haven't seen her since?
Once, for her mother's funeral just a few days later. She marched up on her own, attended the burial, gave me a hug, then marched back down. All without rest, from what I've heard. I try to keep up with her. I have a colleague in the deep nursery who will wire now and then with a bit of news. It's all focus, focus, focus with her.
Nichols paused and laughed.
You know, when she was young, all I saw was her mother and her, but she grew up to be more like me.
Is there anything you know that would preclude her from or make her ill-suited for the job of silo sheriff? You do understand what's involved with the job, right?
I understand.
Nichols looked over at Marnes, his eye drifting to the copper badge visible through the open, shoddily tied robe, down to the bulge of a pistol at his side.
All the lawmen throughout the silos have to have someone up top, giving commands. Is that it?
More or less, Jean said.
Why her?
Marnes cleared his throat.
Well, she helped us with an investigation once.
Jules? She was up here?
No, we were down there.
She has no training.
Well, none of us have,
Marnes said.
It's more of a political office, a citizen's post.
She won't agree to it.
Why not?
Jeans asked.
Nichols shrugged. You'll see for yourself, I suppose.
He stood. I wish I could give you more time, but I really should get back. He glanced at the set of double doors. We'll be bringing a family in soon.
I understand.
Jeans rose and shook his hand.
I appreciate you seeing us.
He laughed. Did I have a choice?
Well, of course.
Well, I wish I would have known that sooner.
He smiled and Jean saw that he was joking, or attempting to. As they parted company and walked back down the hallway to collect their things and return the robes, Jean found herself more and more intrigued by this nomination of Marnes. It wasn't his style, a woman from the down deep. A person with baggage? She wondered if his judgment was perhaps clouded by other factors. And, as he held the door for her, leading out to the main waiting room, Mayor Jeans wondered if she was going along with him because her judgment was clouded as well. 3. It was lunchtime, but neither of them was powerfully hungry. Jeanne's nibbled on a corn bar while she walked, priding herself on eating on the climb, like a porter. They continued to pass these tradesmen, and Jeanne's esteem of their profession grew and grew. There was a strange pang of guilt to be heading down under such a light load, while these men and women trudged up, carrying so much. And they moved so fast. She and Marnes pressed themselves against the rail as a downward porter apologetically stomped past. His shadow, a girl of 15 or 16, was right behind him, loaded down with what looked to be sacks of garbage for the recycling center. Jeanne's watched the young girl spiral out of sight, sinewy and smooth legs hanging miles out of her shorts, and felt suddenly very old and very tired. The two of them fell into a rhythmic pace, the reach of each foot hovering over the next tread, a sort of collapsing of the bones, a resignation to gravity, falling to that foot, sliding the hand, reaching the walking stick forward, repeat. Doubt crept into Jeanne's around the 30th floor. What seemed a fine adventure at sunrise now seemed a mighty undertaking. Each step was performed reluctantly, knowing how grueling it would be to win that elevation back. They passed the upper water treatment plant on 32, and Jeanne's realized she was seeing portions of the silo that were practically new to her. It had been a lifetime ago that she'd been this deep, a shameful thing to admit, and in that time, changes had been made. Construction and repair were ongoing. Walls were a different color than she remembered, but then it was hard to trust one's memory. The traffic on the stairs lightened as they neared the IT floors. Here were the most sparsely populated levels of the silo, where less than 24 men and women, but mostly men, operated within their own little kingdom. The silo servers took up almost an entire floor, the machines slowly rebuilding with recent history, having been wiped completely during the uprising. Access to them was now severely restricted, and as Jeanne's passed the landing on the 33rd, she swore she could hear the mighty thrumming of all the electricity they consumed. Whatever the silo had been, or had been designed for, she knew, without asking or being told, that these strange machines were some organ of primacy. Their power draw was a constant source of contention during budget meetings, but the necessity of the cleaning, the fear of even talking about the outside, and all the dangerous taboos that went with it, gave IT incredible leeway. They housed the labs that made the suits, each one tailored to the person waiting in the holding cell, and this alone set them apart from all else. No, Jeanne's told herself, it wasn't simply the taboo of the cleaning, the fear of the outside. It was the hope. There was this unspoken, deadly hope in every member of the silo. A ridiculous, fantastical hope that maybe not for them, but perhaps for their children, or their children's children, life on the outside would be possible once again, and that it would be the work of IT and the bulky suits that emerged from their labs that would make it all possible. Jeanne's felt a shiver even to think about it, living outside. The childhood conditioning was that strong. Maybe God would hear her thoughts and rat her out. She imagined herself in a cleaning suit, a far too common visual, placing herself into the flexible coffin into which she had condemned so many. On the 34th, she slipped off onto the landing. Marnes joined her, his canteen in hand. Jeanne's realized she'd been drinking out of his all day, while hers stayed strapped to her back. There was something childlike and romantic about this, but also something practical. It was more difficult to reach one's own water than it was to grab that of the other from their pack.
Well, you need a break?
He passed the canteen, which had but 2 swallows left in it. Jeanne's took one of them. "Well, this is our next stop," she said. Marnes looked up at the faded number stenciled over the doorway. He had to know what floor they were on, but it was as if he needed to double-check. Jeans returned his canteen.
"In the past, I've always wired them to get the okay on my nominations. It was something Mayor Humphreys did before me and Mayor Jeffers before him." She shrugged. "Way of the world."
"Well, I didn't know they had to approve."
He took the last swallow and patted Jeans on the back, twirled his finger for her to turn around.
"Well, they've never rejected any of my nominations."
Jeans felt her canteen tugged out of her pouch, Marnes's canteen shoved in its place. Her pack felt a smidgen lighter. She realized Marnes wanted to carry her water and share it until it too was empty.
"I think the unwritten rule is there just so we'll carefully consider every judge and lawman, knowing there's some informal oversight."
"So this time you're doing it in person?"
She turned back around to face her deputy.
"I figured we were passing this way."
She paused while a young couple hurried up the stairs behind Marnes, holding hands and taking the treads two at a time.
"And that it might feel even more conspicuous to not stop and check in."
"Check in," Marnes said.
Jeans half expected him to spit over the railing. The tone seemed to require such punctuation. She suddenly felt another of her weaknesses exposed.
"Think of it as a goodwill mission," she said, turning toward the door.
"I'm going to think of it as a fact-finding raid," Marnes muttered, following her.
Unlike at the nursery, Jeans could tell that they would not be buzzed through and sent back into the mysterious depths of IT. While they waited to be seen, she watched as even a member of the staff, identifiable from their red coveralls, was patted down and searched just to leave the wing and exit toward the stairs. A man with a wand, like Terry, a member of IT's own internal security detail, seemed to have the job of checking everyone who passed through the metal gates. The receptionist on the outside of the gates was deferent enough and seemed pleased to have the mayor for a visit. She expressed her condolences for the recent cleaning, an odd thing to say, but something Jeans wished she heard more often. They were shown to a small conference room attached to the main foyer, a place, she supposed, for meeting with various departments without putting them through the hassle of passing through security.
"Look at all this space,"
Marnes whispered, once they were alone in the room together.
"Did you see the size of the entrance hall?"
Jeans nodded. She looked around the ceiling and walls for some peephole, something to confirm the creepy sensation that she was being watched. She set her bag and walking stick down and collapsed wearily into one of the plush chairs. When it moved, she realized the thing was on wheels. Nicely oiled wheels.
"Always wanted to check this place out," Marnes said.
He peered through the glass window that looked back into the wide foyer.
"Every time I've passed this place, and it's only been a dozen times or so, I've been curious to see what's inside."
Jeans nearly asked him to stop talking, but worried that it would hurt his feelings.
"Boy, he's coming in a hurry. Must be because of you."
Jeans turned and looked out the window to see Bernard Holland heading their way. He disappeared from view as he approached the door. The handle flicked down, and the small man whose job it was to keep IT running smoothly strode into the room.
"Mayor."
Bernard was all teeth, the front ones crooked. He reached for Jeans's hand as she rose from the chair, the blasted thing nearly scooting out from underneath her as she pressed down on the armrests.
"Oh, careful," Bernard said, grabbing her elbow to steady her. "Deputy,"
he nodded toward Marnes while Jean steadied herself.
"It's an honor to have you down. I know you don't take these trips often."
"Oh, thanks for seeing us on short notice," Jean said.
"Of course, of course. Please, make yourselves comfortable."
He swept his hand over the lacquered conference table. It was nicer than the one in the mayor's office, though Jeans assuaged her envy by assuming it was shiny from being less frequently employed. She sat, approaching the chair warily, then reached into her bag and produced the set of files.
"Straight to business, as always,"
Bernard said, sitting beside her. He pushed his glasses up his nose and glided forward on the chair until his plump little belly met the desk.
"Always appreciated that about you. We are, as you can imagine with yesterday's unfortunate events, as busy as ever. Lots of data to go through."
"Well, how's that going?"
Johns asked, while she arranged the material in front of her.
"Some positives and negatives, as always. Readouts from some of the seal sensors showed improvement. Atmospheric levels of 8 of the known toxins have declined, though not by much. 2 have risen. Most have remained unchanged."
He waved his hand.
"It's a lot of boring technical stuff, but it'll all be in my report. I should have it boarded up before you get back to your office."
"Well, that'll be fine," Jean said. She wanted to say something else, to acknowledge his department's hard work, to let him know that another cleaning had been successful, God knew why, but it was Holston out there, the closest thing she'd ever had to a shadow, the only man she ever saw running for her office when she was dead and feeding the roots of the fruit trees. It was too soon to mention it, much less applaud it.
"I'd normally wire this sort of thing to you," she said, "but since we were passing by, and you won't be up for the next committee meeting for, what, another 3 months?"
"The years go fast," Bernard said.
"I just figured we could informally agree to this now, so I could offer our best candidate the job."
She glanced up at Marnes.
"Once she accepts, we can finish the paperwork on our way back up, if you don't mind."
She slid the folder toward Bernard and was surprised when he produced one of his own, rather than accept hers.
"Well, let's go over this," Bernard said.
He opened his folder, licked his thumb, and flipped through a few pieces of high-quality paper.
"We were wired about your visit, but your list of candidates didn't hit my desk until this morning. Otherwise, I would have tried to save you the trip down and back up."
He pulled out a piece of paper, devoid of creases. It didn't even look bleached. Jean's wondered where IT got such things while her office was held together with cornstarch paste.
"I'm thinking of the 3 names listed here that Billings is our man."
"Well, we may consider him next,"
Deputy Marnes started to say.
"I think we should consider him now."
He slid the paper toward Jean's. It was an acceptance contract. There were signatures at the bottom. One line was left blank, the mayor's name neatly printed underneath. She had to catch her breath.
"You've already contacted Peter about this?"
"Oh, he accepted. The judge's robe was going to be a little stifling for him, being so young and full of energy. I thought he was a fine choice for that role, but I think he's an even better one now for the job of sheriff."
Jean's remembered Peter's nomination process. It had been one of the times she'd gone along with Bernard's suggestion, seeing it as a trade for a future pick of her own. She studied the signature, Peter's hand familiar from his various notes sent up on behalf of Judge Wilson. She imagined one of the porters who had flown past them on the steps that day, apologizing as they went, rushing this very piece of paper down.
"I'm afraid Peter is currently 3rd on our list," Mayor Johns finally said.
Her voice suddenly felt tired. It sounded frail and weak in the cavernous and wasteful space of that underused and outsized conference room. She looked up at Marnes, who was glaring at the contract, his jaw clenching and unclenching.
"Well, I think we both know Donald's name is on the list for flattery. He's too old for the job."
"Younger than me," Marnes spat. "I hold up just fine."
Bernard tilted his head.
"Yes, well, your first choice simply won't do, I'm afraid."
"And why is that?" Johns asked.
"I'm not sure how thorough your background check has been, but we've had enough problems with this candidate that I recognized her name, even though she is from mechanical."
Bernard said this last word like it was full of nails and might gut him to spit it out.
"What kind of problem?" Marnes demanded to know.
Jean shot the deputy a look of warning.
"Nothing we would have wanted to report, mind you."
Bernard turned to Marnes. There was venom in the small man's eyes, a raw hatred for the deputy, or perhaps for the star on his chest.
Nothing worth involving the law, but there have been some creative requisitions from her office, items rerouted from our use, improper claims of priority, and the like.
Bernard took a deep breath and folded his hands together on top of the folder in front of him.
I wouldn't go as far as calling it stealing, per se, but we have filed complaints with Deegan Knox, as head of mechanical, to inform him of these irregularities.
Well, that's it, Marnes growled. Requisitions?
Bernard frowned. He spread his hands on the folder.
That's it? Have you been listening? The woman has practically stolen goods, has had items rerouted from my department. It's not clear if these are even for silo use. They could be for personal gain. God knows the woman uses more than her allowance of electricity. Maybe she trades for chits.
Is this a formal accusation? Marnes asked.
He made a show of pulling his pad from his pocket and clicking his mechanical pen.
No. As I said, we would not want to trouble your office. But, as you can see, this is not the sort of person to enter a career in high law. It's what I expect of a mechanic, to be honest, which is where, I'm afraid, this candidate should stay.
He patted the folder as if putting the issue to rest. That's your suggestion, Mayor Jean said.
Why, yes, and I think since we have such a fine candidate ready and willing to serve and already living in the up-top, I'll take your suggestion into account.
Johns took the crisp contract from the table and conspicuously folded it in half, pinching the crease with her fingernails as she slid them down its length. She stuck the piece of paper in one of her folders while Bernard watched, horrified.
And since you have no formal complaints about our first candidate, I will take this as tacit approval to speak with her about the job.
Jean stood and grabbed her bag. She slid the folders into the outside pouch and secured the flap, then grabbed her walking stick from where it leaned against the conference table.
Thank you for seeing us. Yes, but...
Bernard scooted away from the table and hurried after her as Jean made for the door. Marnes got up and followed, smiling.
Well, what should I tell Peter? He's of the assumption that he starts any time.
Well, you should never have told him anything, Jean said.
She stopped in the foyer and glanced at Bernard.
I gave you my list in confidence. Now you betrayed that. Now I appreciate all you do for the silo. You and I have a long and peaceable history working together, overseeing what might be the most prosperous age our people have known. Which is why, Bernard began, which is why I'm forgiving this trespass, Mayor Jean said. This is my job, my people. They elected me to make these kinds of decisions, so my deputy and I will be on our way. We will give our top choice a fair interview, and I will be sure to stop by on my way up in case there is anything to sign.
Bernard spread his hands in defeat.
Very well, he said. I apologize. I only hope to expedite the process. Now, please rest a little. You are our guest. Let me get you some food, maybe some fruit.
We'll be on our way, Jean said.
Fine, he nodded, but at least some water. Top up your canteens.
Jean remembered one of them was already empty, and they had a few more flights to go.
Well, that would be a kind gesture, she said.
She waved to Marnes, who turned so she could grab his canteen from his pack. Then she turned her back so he could grab hers as well. Bernard waved to one of his workers to come fetch them and fill them up, but the entire time he had his eyes on this curious and intimate exchange. 4. They were almost down to the 50s before Jeanne could think straight. She imagined she could feel the weight of Peter Billing's contract in her pack. Marnes muttered his own complaints from a few steps behind, bitching about Bernard and trying to keep up, and Jeanne realized she was fixated now. The weariness in her thighs and calves had become compounded by the growing sense that this trip was more than a mistake. It was probably futile. A father who warns her that his daughter won't accept? Pressure from IT to choose another? Now, each step of their descent could be taken with dread. Dread, and yet a new certainty that Juliet was their man. This woman from Mechanical would be convinced to take the job, if only to show Bernard, if only to keep the arduous journey from becoming a total waste. Jeanne's was old, had been mayor a long time, partly because she got things done, partly because she prevented worse things from happening, but mostly because she made little turmoil. She felt like it was about time. Now, while she was old enough for it to not matter the consequences. She glanced back at Marnes and knew the same went for him. Their time was almost up. The best, the most important thing they could do for the silo was to make sure their legacy endured. No uprisings. No abuses of power. It was why she ran unopposed the last few elections. But now she could sense that she was gliding to the finish while stronger and younger runners were preparing to overtake her. How many judges had she signed off on at Bernard's request? And now the sheriff, too? How long before Bernard was mayor? Or worse, a puppet master with strings interwoven throughout the silo?
"Take it easy," Marnes huffed.
Jeanne's realized she was going too fast. She slowed her pace.
"That bastard's got you riled up,"
he said.
"And you better be as well,"
she hissed back at him.
"You're passing the gardens."
Jeanne's checked the landing number and saw that he was right. If she'd been paying attention, she would have noticed the smell. When the doors on the next landing flew open, a porter bearing sacks of fruit on each shoulder strode out, the scent of lush and wet vegetation accompanying him and overpowering her. It was past dinner time, and the smell was intoxicating. The porter, even overburdened, saw that they were leaving the stairwell for the landing and held the door open with a planted foot as his arms bulged around the weight of the large sacks.
"Mayor,"
he said, bowing his head and then nodding to Marnes as well. Jeanne's thanked him. Most of the porters looked familiar to her, having seen them over and over as they delivered throughout the silo, but they never stayed in one place long enough for her to catch and remember a name, a normally keen skill of hers. She wondered, as she and Marnes entered the hydroponic farms, if the porters made it home every night to be with their families. Or did they even have families? Were they like the priests? She was too old and too curious not to know these things. But then, maybe it took a day on the stairwell to appreciate their job, to fully notice them. The porters were like the air she breathed, always there, always serving, so necessary as to be ubiquitous and taken for granted. But now, the weariness of the climb had opened her senses fully to them. It was like a sudden drop in the oxygen, triggering her appreciation.
"Smell those oranges,"
Marnes said, snapping Jeanne's out of her thoughts. He sniffed the air as they passed through the low garden gates. A staff member in green coveralls waved them through.
"Bags here, Mayor,"